The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So welcome, welcome. Nice to see you all. That was a very nice sit for me. I kind of got settled in and felt kind of cozy and... So today I'd like to continue on this series of teachings that I'm doing on the seven factors of awakening. I like this idea that there's these certain factors that support awakening. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about how we can cultivate them. Sometimes we might have this feeling, and I know I certainly did for quite a long time, like, I don't know, finding more freedom just seemed like it might be some random thing that happens, or if the conditions were just right, you know, or something like that. But the seven factors of awakening point to that we can cultivate. We can work with these things. We can help create the conditions in which there's more freedom in our lives. I'll talk a little bit more about that, but today is the fifth factor, which is tranquility, pasiddhi in Pali. Probably we all know this idea of what tranquility is. It's peaceful or calm, serenity, contentment. But maybe it's worthwhile spending a little bit talking about what it's not. Because sometimes we might have this idea that tranquility is just about being quiet. And there is a way in which it certainly is about being quiet, but we might think that it's just the absence of moving or the absence of making noises or something like this. Or maybe something that it's more... closely related to, sometimes we might use this expression, near enemy, something that looks like that but isn't. Kind of like this sleepiness, right? When you kind of have this certain amount of relaxation before you drift off to sleep. That's not quite the same thing as tranquility, even though there is certainly some tranquility there, but the tranquility that's the factor of awakening has a certain alertness to it. Even though there's not activity, it doesn't mean that the mind is kind of like checked out and there's some dullness or some, I don't know, just not really being present. So it's not, also it's not a complacency where, or a lack of energy where we might just be kind of dully sitting there, right? This is kind of, it's not really tranquility. Tranquility still has this uprightness, but it has, maybe we might say, just the right amount of energy. Not too much and not too little. Right? And this is something we always practice with, is, you know, what is the right amount of energy? What's the right amount of effort? And I'd like to say this is part of the art of practice. It's not like we dial it in once and we have it and we never have to work with it again. Maybe I'll say something else about tranquility. It's not like this bored, indifferent, disengaged, like, yes, okay, I'll sit here upright if you're meditating, and but we're off, you know, in some fantasy or about what we're going to do as soon as the dang bell rings or something like this. So tranquility, it has a certain amount of alertness. And the mind is certainly present and the body has some ease to it. It's a type of, you know, relaxation. And it's similar to what we might say equanimity. But equanimity is pointing more towards like a view that we have. And I'll talk more about equanimity. It's also a factor of awakening. It's the seventh one. Whereas tranquility is more kind of a feeling in the body, this non-agitation. Of a contentment. So maybe I'll just say, I mentioned that tranquility is the fifth factor of awakening, equanimity is the seventh. I'll just read the list here, I'll say the list. Mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. And there is a way in which we could make a story about how one leads to each of the others. We could start with mindfulness. Mindfulness can be a support all the way through. Or there's a way in which we can just practice and cultivate each one individually. And it's a little bit of both happening at the same time. But I think it's noteworthy that in this list that tranquility follows joy. Because when there's a certain amount of joy, and we feel that, and we're like saturated with it, then there can be a sense of no more looking for something else. No more thinking like, gosh, I wish things were different. This is terrible. Right? When there's a certain amount of joy, there can be a settling of that. It can be so subtle and sometimes really obvious. A settling of that leaning forward, looking for something else, the next thing. Looking for something better or something that is more satisfying. So I think it's noteworthy that tranquility follows joy, but that's not the only way to get to tranquility. We don't have to fill ourselves up purposely trying to get as happy as we can so that we can have some tranquility. But instead, I'll talk a little bit about what is part of the role of tranquility in our practice. And then I'll talk a little bit about how we can cultivate it. So part of the role is there's a way in which when there's some quieting down, then there's this softening of this persistent feeling that something has to happen, this persistent feeling of wanting to be entertained or persistent feeling of wanting to feel like we're in control or that we're alive or something like this. When that has quieted down, there's a lot of healing that can happen. And I'll just use this generic word, healing. All the different things. It can be physical healing. I'm not here to say that it's a miracle. Tranquility and mindfulness is. I know it can have a lot of shifts in people's life that can be really a support for something different to show up. But there's a way in which just being quiet can be a tremendous support for whatever's happening in our lives. And sometimes this being quiet means that the inner critic has settled down, this kind of way in which we often beat ourselves up or thinking like, you should do this or you shouldn't have done that, or you know, this kind of also this persistent inner voice we might have sometimes. So when there's some tranquility, that inner critic has softened. When that inner critic has softened, then there can be this opening and relaxation. And we're maybe a little bit more available to examine what's really happening or what is the wise thing to do, or maybe try something different or make room for some new ideas or some new thoughts to arise. So this tranquility can serve as a tremendous resource in our lives, and to be able to know that it's even possible and to have to cultivate it and develop it can be a real support. So one way that it can be a support, I talked about how it can allow healing and maybe a little bit of space for something new to arise. But some of this, what's new to arise, might be wisdom. I think we all know that when we're agitated, we don't have access to our best wisdom. We don't have access to the best versions of ourselves. So Gil Fronsdal says, if you need wisdom, try tranquility first. Tranquility helps create the conditions for some wisdom to arise. Often we can't just, you know, conjure up wisdom. So tranquility is a way in which can really be a support for, as I said, like the best versions of ourselves. And in this tradition of meditation and this tradition of Buddhism, we focus on the development of insight, this seeing deeply into our experiences, seeing deeply into our lives, so that we can see them differently and we can understand them differently. And with that understanding, there's can bring a certain sense of freedom. There can be a realization like, oh, I don't need these things that I'm really holding on to. I don't need to prove that I'm right all the time. I don't need to bolster up this sense of self and make sure everybody knows how wonderful I am or how they don't know how I think I'm not wonderful. This way in which we try to hide from other people and put up these walls. So these insights often can arise when we have some of this tranquility. And it serves like, we might say, it's like the best possible soil for wisdom to grow and insights to grow. So in this way, tranquility does support awakening. It's an awakening factor, supports liberation because it helps create the conditions in which not only can there be some wisdom that arises, some insights that arise, but I think all of us know, without my having to say this, that tranquility arises when there is not a lot of holding on for dear life, right? There's a certain amount of letting go. There's a certain amount of ease that has to arise when there's some tranquility. And the same movement, this exact same movement of letting go, the letting go that supports tranquility, is the same letting go that supports awakening. Awakening is a really deep letting go. And so when the mind starts to quiet, and I'll talk a little bit more about this when I talk about the next awakening factor, concentration, but when the mind and the body start to settle, it starts to become more clear the way in which we're clenching, the ways in which we're holding, the places that aren't tranquil, just really become more evident. And so maybe there's a way in which in the presence of some tranquility there can be a little bit more softening and letting go. And that movement is the exact same movement for awakening. And whether it's a big Shazam awakening or just a little bit more freedom in our lives, all of them have this same quality of abandoning, giving up, relinquishing, letting go. So maybe you'll have this idea like, okay, it sounds like a reasonable thing, this tranquility, but how do we cultivate it? Maybe the obvious one is meditation practice. I think probably all forms of meditation, whatever form you do, like Buddhist or not, you know, just really supports tranquility. And we might, there's this way, and we might think that, well, I just can do insight, or I can do concentration, or I can do loving kindness. Those are kind of the three primary meditations that we do in this tradition. Maybe I'll say that for the most part, when we do meditation on the breath, which is often, I think, often when we teach introduction to meditation, when we teach mindfulness, we often have this starting with the breath. Something that can be a support to support tranquility is two things. One, for the most part, not to control the breath as best you can. I certainly went through this phase where I was like controlling the breath. That was like the only way I knew how to be aware of it, was to somehow be manipulating it and engineering and something at the same time I was paying attention. Like somehow I knew I was paying attention because I was changing it. And I kind of struggled for a long time. Like, I don't know how to pay attention without changing it. I'll just say that this is something that just kind of went away over time. And so this might be a season of practice in which you feel like, oh, I'm changing, I don't want to change it. But maybe you can just soften about wanting to not change it. If you notice that you're settling, subtly manipulating the breath, just notice. We don't have to add additional problems on top of it. Just notice like, oh yeah, okay, here's a little bit of changing the breath. Because there's a way in which we might be trying to control so many things in our lives. And why not, right? We want to control things. We want to feel like we're in control. The truth is we're not as nearly as much as we think we are, right? But we want to feel like we are. And so it just kind of comes over into our meditation practice with controlling the breath. So now, having said that, now I'm going to say, to support, if you're feeling really agitated and you're doing some meditation, to support some ease is to maybe pay a little bit of extra attention, if this makes any sense, to the exhale. Give a little bit more emphasis to the exhale. Just maybe like to all the way to the end of the exhale, noticing the beginning of the inhale. And there might be a way that can be like mindfulness all to the exhale. For me, I kind of has this feeling it's going down. And then there might be a way in which the mind darts away. Okay, here's another exhale. But just noticing there's a way in which the exhale really supports some ease. But one thing that we notice that when we're trying to meditate, any kind of meditation, and when we're trying to cultivate tranquility will arise anytime we meditate. But if we have this idea we want to cultivate tranquility, what we might be noticing is the non-tranquility that's present. And we can work with that. Restlessness, worry, anxiety, these types of things. And very often we come to meditation as a way to work with these things. So one thing I'll say is like to understand restlessness, agitation, anxiety. Probably the most helpful thing that we can do is to understand it, to get familiar with it, this agitation, which is exactly what we don't want to do. We want to make it go away. But there's a way in which if we understand it, understand the conditions in which it really arises or what it feels like, it certainly takes a little bit of time. We have to hang out with the restlessness. We have to hang out with the anxiety. But this can serve us so much in our lives and can really make a big difference. So the first thing I'll say, kind of like, to work with the restlessness, the non-tranquility, is to hang out with it. How does it feel in the body? How does it feel in the mind? And there might be a way in which it feels like, okay, in the mind, it just feels like, I've heard Gil say this and I really liked it, kind of like ping pong balls bouncing around inside. So is there a way that we can just feel like we're bigger? So maybe our awareness is bigger, or just like feel the, maybe there's even feel like a bubble around us or something, so that there's a little bit more room for the ping pong balls to bounce around. We're not insisting that they go away. We're just making space for them. So this is something that we can do just maybe with the idea. I'm doing this with my arms because I feel like this often when I'm meditating that I'm creating, if I feel like I need space, I feel like I'm kind of creating a bubble in front of me, a bubble with my awareness. Also, again, I'll credit Gil for this, something that I appreciate is like this imagination that you're in an elevator, and this really did happen to me. I'm not a very tall person, and I was in the elevator, and then this whole basketball team got in the elevator with me. And we were all crammed in there, right? And everybody's so much taller than me. And there's this feeling like I had this little, like, get me out of here. It just wasn't a good feeling. So this feeling of maybe like being crammed in, and then you're with people and you're, and the way that Gil explained it, and this was not the case for me, but like, what if they're really smelly and their clothes have all these stains on them or something like this, really tall and big, you know, that you're feeling, I don't know, claustrophobic. And then what if the elevator opens, the elevator door opens, and you're in a beautiful cathedral. And you just take one, two, three steps. And everybody, they're all still there, but they all just kind of move out into this cathedral. Is there a way that, you know, without making this a big complicated thing that we're doing, like just bring to mind if you've been in a place with high ceilings or had big windows that you felt like, wow. I had those feelings like going through some of these cathedrals in Europe, like, wow, like this amazing feeling. So there's a way we can incline the mind that way. And recognizing that there might still be some agitation, but it just stops becoming so much of a problem. And then in the agitation, the things can calm down. So in the mind, agitation, restlessness, anxiety, these things, they might show up in so many different ways. Maybe we're the scattered thinking, we can't quite land or focus on anything, or we feel like it's distracted by everything. We have this in our daily lives. We walk into a room, wait, why am I here? You know, it's driving past our exits, these types of things. But this restlessness, this non-tranquility, it might be less noticeable if it's our constant companion. It's not uncommon these days for us to just be agitated. If you read the news a lot, if you're on social media a lot, if you have a job in which it makes you feel frazzled, or you have an environment in which makes you feel frazzled, there's a way in which it can just feel like, well, this is what it means to be alive, is to have this certain amount of buzziness that's not tranquil. And I'd like to say that there can't be really be some ease that is available to us as humans, is possible. But I also want to point to, maybe if it's our constant companion, it's difficult to recognize, but I also want to point to, sometimes we have this mixed relationship with this idea of relaxation or tranquility. We might feel like, yeah, I need to relax, I need to be tranquil, and yet we're hesitant to get settled. We're reluctant to let go of whatever it is that's fueling the buzziness. We might not want to let go of these anxious thoughts. Instead, we might try to just distract ourselves from them by being busy or doing something that's increases or just sustains the restlessness. But there might also be this way in which we want to shield ourselves. We think that we're protecting ourselves from avoiding any big emotional swings or something. We don't want to get quiet because we know we're just going to be anxious or restless later. So we might as well just be restless all the time, because there's something about getting quiet and still, and then when that ends, there's a disappointment or something that just feels worse than just regular restlessness. But I'd like to encourage us to find a way in which we can get settled. Because as I said earlier, it's from those more settled places where the greater wisdom and the best versions of ourselves can show up, in which there can be some letting go. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment here, but I also want to say that there's also another reason why we are hesitant, reluctant to let go of some restlessness. It's because there's a way in which our mind is thinking that it's solving a problem by just ruminating over something over and over and over and over again. I had this happen earlier this week. I was going to do something that I'd never done before, and there's a lot of things, like, I'm not sure I know how to do this, and I don't know, I was just nervous about it. And I found myself, like, playing it over in my mind again and again, like, this actually is not useful. I'm either going to do it or I'm not going to do it. And it was one of those things, like, if I didn't know how to do it, well, it would have been fine, right, to know tragedy. So this is just the mind, you know, our wanting to feel like we're in control. We want to feel like we're solving problems. And instead, we end up just becoming restless and agitated. But I want to say there's a good reason. Like, we don't have to beat ourselves up that we're this way. Our environments certainly support, right? We have these huge industries that their sole purpose is to get us agitated and distracted, right? All these apps on our phones and social media make us feel like we need to do something else, or advertising make us feel like we need something else, right? So I think we can allow ourselves, like, oh, okay, this is what it is. Of course, this is what it is. So, practicing with restlessness, recognizing how it feels in the body, recognizing, giving ourselves a break that we might be reluctant to do this. But is there a way in which we can let go of the beliefs that support this idea of restlessness? This movement, oh yeah, that's just a thought. It's just a belief. I have this idea that if I think about this again and again, it's going to somehow be helpful. Or if I maintain this distracted buzziness, that it's going to be helpful. But there's other types of beliefs that really support this. Having really strong opinions. That's a way of which holding on. And I'm not saying that we don't have to have any opinions, and I'm not saying that we have to tolerate everything. But there's a way, if we have this really strong opinion, then it sets up of, like, no, all those people are wrong and I'm right, and we have to somehow make sure that we've rehearsed all the reasons why they're wrong and we're right, and this holding on, just the holding on itself is agitating. And along those lines is, can we soften some of these judgments? Judgments about ourselves, judgments about others. Things should be this way. Things should not be that way. Can we just let those go? Or soften them as best we can? So here's this. The Buddha talks about this a little bit in one of these suttas. And here he's talking about, can we let go of some of these beliefs? Can we let go of some of these attachments? These attachments like, I'm the one that knows. I'm the one that has it right. Those people are bad and I'm good, or something like this. Or it sounds ridiculous when I'm saying this, but there might be subtle ways in which this is showing up. And can we just say, yeah, okay, this is a belief I have right now. Doesn't mean it's true, it's just a belief I have right now. So the Buddha, he's in this quote, he's pointing to, can we let go of whatever it is that's binding us? whether it's a belief or an attachment. And he starts by giving a simile. Suppose there were a bull elephant with tusks like chariot poles, able to draw a heavy load and battle-hardened. We don't have elephants so much here in Redwood City, but, you know, elephants are giant and have tusks like chariot poles are really long and battle-hardened, right? It knows how to go in. It's tough, right? This big, giant, big, tough thing. And suppose this elephant were bound with a strong harness, but just by twisting its body a little, it would snap apart its bonds and go wherever it wants. We can imagine this. Elephants are giant creatures. Would it be right to say that for that elephant, that strong harness is a strong, firm, stout bond? No. For that elephant, that harness is weak, feeble, rotten, and insubstantial. And then the Buddha says, in the same way, when some people are told by me to abandon this, beliefs, attachments, whatever it is we find ourselves really holding on to, and it's amazing all the things that we can hold on to. When some people are told by me to abandon things, they say, what? I just have to abandon this trivial, insignificant thing as this? A belief might think like it's insignificant. And when the Blessed One tells them to abandon it, they abandon it. And they don't nurse bitterness towards me, towards the Buddha. And when the practitioners who wish to train have abandoned that, they live relaxed, unruffled, their hearts free as wild deer. So these attachments we might have, he's saying that there's a way in which we can abandon, or we can break these bonds, we can, by letting go. And then, of course, there's the opposite. So the opposite of the elephant in the sutta is a quail. I don't know if California quails are the same as what they have in India, but California quail, they're so cute, right? These little creatures. They run along and they have these little things on their head. They're like so adorable, but they run like really fast all over, right? Suppose a quail was tied with a vine and was waiting there to be injured, caged, or killed, you know, just being stuck. This might even happen, I don't know. A quail might get tangled up with a vine. Would it be right to say that for that quail, that vine is weak, feeble, rotten, and insubstantial? No. For that quail, that vine, is a strong, firm, stout bond, a tie that is not rotted and is a heavy yoke. In the same way, when people are told by me to give something up, to abandon, to let go, they say, what? Such a trivial, insignificant thing is this? This teacher is too strict. And they don't give it up. And they nurse bitterness towards the teacher. Like, I can't believe they're asking me to let go or soften or loosen this thing. And for those practitioners, that trivial, insignificant thing actually becomes a strong, firm, stout bond, a tie that is not rotted, a heavy yoke. So, that's something for us to think about. What is it that we're holding on? What are these bonds? Is there some softening, some letting go that we can do so that we can live relaxed, unruffled, with hearts free as wild deer, as in this simile? Maybe I'll say a few more things here about how we might do that. Some of them are obvious. Relaxing the body. We do some of that in a meditation practice. Sometimes if I'm doing a guided meditation, I will start with relaxing the body. I'll lead us in relaxing the body. One is to just continue sitting. Often tranquility finds us, right, if we're sitting long enough. One is there a way to cultivate contentment and gratitude in one's life? Like, this is enough. Gratitude practice can be so supportive. And this sense of like, I don't need more. I don't have to succumb to this fear of missing out, or instead have like maybe the joy of missing out or something like this. And then, of course, tranquility is a support for tranquility. So the ways, if we notice that the restlessness has quieted, or maybe there isn't a lot of restlessness, to just notice that calmness. It might be subtle, but just noticing that calmness helps support more calmness, helps support more tranquility, appreciating when it's there and noticing it. And then, of course, spending time alone, spending time off of screens, spending time in nature. I think everybody knows this, right? Sometimes it's helpful to be reminded, like, oh yeah, it's good to spend time outside if we can, in nature. So tranquility is this factor of awakening. It's a great support for our lives and for our practice moving towards greater and greater freedom. So may you find some tranquility in your life, and may it be a support for you. Thank you.